Blog Talk Radio.
Going into the corner, Gordie Howe goes in to fight for it. He and Zinkenkopf have it. Back to Walt, not in front. Here's Bobby Howe, shoots good! Bobby Howe!
Dunell trying to make a play. Lemieux steals, and he's up against Raymond Bork and Adam Oates. Coming to the Bruins, they got around both men. Cutting for the net, he's in on goal. Hey! Charlton scores! What a goal!
Brune carries in, rolling in front of the net, and shot! Desjardins following the play, and he misses the short shot. Here he is again! Scores!
Fans, you're listening to the hard-checking, kick-saving, sudden-death scoring NHL Breakdown. I'm your host, Scott Levy, joined as always by George Kurtz of RotoExperts.com. We're bringing you all the on- and off-ice action, as well as you keeping you fans and you fantasy owners fully informed at the top of your respective leagues with our fantasy reports, including the IR, goalie report, line updates, and waiver wire recommendations. Today is, of course, Friday, November 23rd. Happy American Thanksgiving. And this is really pretty much where we hit the quarter point for sure in the NHL season. Lots of things start moving, ahead once you reach that point. Now that you're a quarter way into the season, you definitely have much better idea of what teams are and what they're going to be. So in the coming weeks, one of the things that will come out is George and I, around this time of year, usually the first couple of weeks of December, we roll out our own power rankings. Now, these power rankings aren't like the weekly power rankings that you see in a lot of sites where it can sort of be very fluid, although our rankings are fluid as well. This is more, it will be more of an overall ranking of what we think of the teams and what they're going to be for the rest of the year. So look forward to that in the coming weeks. But lots to talk about today. Of course, as always, we have the fantasy reports. But two more coaching firings. And, George, I have to say, one of the things that sort of really jumps out at me about the coaching firings is just the fact that last year we had the unusual situation that there were no NHL coaches that were fired in season, which is a bit unusual because you usually have one or two. You know, it doesn't always come early in the season like these have. But now we've got four different coaching changes. Obviously, we talked about the one in Chicago and L.A. in the last couple of shows. But Edmonton and St. Louis joining the fray of changing up their head coaches. So obviously, I want to ask you about this, starting with the St. Louis Blues. Now, George, I'm not sitting here and saying that people were picking the Blues to be cup champions, because that's just not true, or at least it wasn't, you know, a lot of people doing that. But there was plenty of people after this offseason, after they made their moves, when we got around the end of July, the beginning of August, a lot of people were saying, okay, I like the moves that St. Louis made. They're going to improve the club. It looks like they're probably going to be a solid playoff team. I mean, I think most of us feel that Nashville and Winnipeg are clearly at least a little bit better. Again, this is sort of at the beginning of the season. So a lot of people, you know, pick them to finish, you know, third or get a wild card. But again, the general narrative is that this is going to be a pretty solid team with all the additions that they made, bringing in guys like Bozak and Perron in particular. Obviously, the big trade for O'Reilly and sort of not cleaning house a bit, sending three guys the other way. So, George, looking at this, you know, I generally don't like the idea of changing the coach when you've already had a lot of changeover in the off season, at least this early in the year, because I almost kind of wonder, have you given that coach enough time to get those players settled in into the system and find chemistry with the right players or whatnot? But at the same time, I have an argument against that thought process of the fact, well, the things that really went most wrong with the St. Louis Blues so far this season are the things that have stayed the same. Goaltending, defense, those are historically been at least solid, if not good, positions of play for St. Louis the last decade plus. And it's the offense that's sort of been a little bit up and down. Now, yes, they got shut out three of the last four games, which sort of was the, you know, final straw, it seems, in Yao getting fired. But up until that point, they were scoring pretty well. And that's where all the changeover has come. So you can take my point and run with it, or you can sort of dismiss it completely. But I'm really curious, at least given what I said, and obviously whatever you think about the situation, that what's your opinion on what's going on here? Is this one of those situations? Because a lot of times we talk, and if you're writing most of the shows, you've heard us say this, a lot of times a coach gets unfairly blamed in firing. The whole, you can't fire 20, 22 players, at least in the middle of the season, you know, you're going to go with the coach if you need to make some sort of radical change. But do you think this was a coaching issue? I mean, I know you generally don't like early season coaching changes, but I'm wondering if this move makes sense to you because of some of the problems that I've already laid out. So I guess at the end of the day, is this just a shock him into playing well kind of move? Or were you looking at this team going, yeah, it's just not working. Yao's got to go, or something of the like. So, George, I know we threw out a lot out there at you, but you look at the St. Louis Blues, having trouble talking today. What do you see? What do you think about this move?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing you look at is all the moves they made in the offseason. You mentioned them already. I'm not going to go through them again. So they made all those moves. So the general manager did what he figures is his part, right? You acquire the players you think they're going to make this team go. They're going to make this team compete. They make this team better. Now, you also put a valid point. Really, nobody outside of St. Louis or a big Blues fan was picking the Blues to be a Stanley Cup champion. Even with all these moves, they were still behind Winnipeg and Nashville. That's your own division. All right, that's rough. You play in the best division in hockey. So, but of course, it comes down to it's almost to me like it's protecting your own ass. And what I mean by that is general manager made his moves. You know, what he thinks is going to make a team better. Still not working. Now we're playing worse than we were last season. You know, what am I going to do? You know, you got to save your own job here. You know, and usually, you said it first, you can't fire 20 players. All right? So that means the coach has to go. Well, guess what? You know, generally the next thing, actually before the coach, generally you would get a trade. You would trade one of those players. You can't trade 25, but you can trade one or two of them. See if that shakes it up. And if that doesn't work, then the coach goes. And if that doesn't work, well, then guess who's next to go? That's generally the general manager. You know, and you can make this argument that, well, he got rid of those plays in the offseason, right, by making the moves he made. So he already tried that. Now the coach is gone. Now, if this doesn't work out, the Blues, let's say, don't make the playoffs by the end of the year, well, I imagine the GM's next. That's just the way with dominoes usually for professional sports. It's just the way it is. Now, you can say this is too early. You know, and I think you were sort of mentioning it, that I'm generally against early season fires. We're about a quarter of a way through the season. For the Blues, it's a tick or two less than a quarter of the way. They played 20 games. So for all intents and purposes, we are 25% of the way through. I mean, I still think it's early, but I think they are also one of the bigger disappointing teams this season. I mean, what's your top three disappointing teams? I'd probably have the Blues, the Kings. Kings fired their coach. You know, Penguins. Yeah, I think they'd be up there. Florida. I think they'd be there too, but Florida hasn't played many games, so they're, you know, that may be why their point total is so low. Philadelphia, I think, could be in this conversation. But the problem is, you know, you look at Pittsburgh, okay, yeah, you know, they've disappointed 20 points. Yeah, only 6 points out of first place, though. You know, the division's kind of weak. I mentioned Florida, disappointing, but they've only played 19 games, at least out in the game. You know, Philadelphia, no one's really expecting them to be a true breakout anyway. The Kings are a different story of their own. They already fired their coach. You know, so maybe this does make some sense. You know, maybe Mike Yao now has failed in two places. He's not the coach we think he's going to be. Or maybe he's not the coach for these players. You know, and I don't think it's all on Yao. Well, keep in mind, I don't. You know, you look at the team. I mean, they've had their issues. Braden Schwartz isn't scoring at all. You know, what happened to him from last year? So I don't know what's up with I just don't know what's going on here with Jaden. And now he's on IR, so that hurts. Tarasenko has been not quite. This will be a 30-40 goal player, and he's on the pace of about 25-28. You needed more from that. You know, you expected better. Braden Schenn really hasn't been the same since, what, three-quarters of the way through last season? You know, and that could be because he's not playing with Tarasenko and Schwartz anymore. You know, now he's really on that second line, more with Robbie Fabry, who we've been waiting to do something and hasn't been quite that player. Steen's hurt again, but he's hurt all the time. I think you brought up the biggest thing, Jake Allen, the goaltender. I mean, we were teased during that playoff run 2 years ago where he was, wow, just a brick wall playing out of his mind. And you were teasing, okay, not that you expect him to play, be that for, you know, 50, 55 games during the regular season, but you know he has that ability. But he can't do it anywhere near consistent at all. And now, you know, I think there are some legitimate thoughts here that maybe he's just a very good backup, you know, or a 1A, 1B type goaltender, but he needs somebody good with him. Yeah, and he's just not somebody who can carry your team here. And I'll say it again, if you don't have a goaltender in the NHL, you're not going anywhere. Doesn't matter how good or bad the rest of your team is, and this is not a great team anyway. You know, it's not like this is a team, I guess the Penguins who've won it with subpar, you know, I shouldn't say subpar, but not great goaltending. You know, this team needs a good goaltender, and they may not have it. So I think that's his issue is here as well. So I think bottom line for me, Scott, is I don't think this firing bothers me as much as maybe my previous statements on early coach firings would suggest. You know, the Kings certainly didn't bother me because, once again, that team was playing so pathetically, something had to change there. And you know, the Blues, same thing. And I think what you're seeing here, at least with these two teams, pretty much veteran teams who made changes in the offseason by the GM. He made his moves, trades, and bringing in free agents, and they didn't work. So now, well, maybe it's not the players. Maybe it is the coach. I think that's what's going on here. The coach couldn't get these players to meld into the system. Well, the system's wrong, whatever it might be. And the coach is going to pay the price here. So I can't say I'm surprised that, you know, Mike Yao's gone. Can't say that I'm surprised at all.
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well, you know, here for me. You know, I think it's a, you know, sort of a combination of two things that you know, you strongly suggested. I can't help but wonder if part of the reason for the subpar play is that confidence in the goaltender. You say it all the time, George. If you don't have at least a solid goaltender, I mean, a lot of times you say it when you're talking about, like, if you have a 1A, 1B situation, if you don't have, you know, if you have two goaltenders, you have no goaltenders. But, you know, if you extend that thought, if you don't have confidence in your goaltender, it either sort of, it can very likely sap the emotional life out of you. You know, you give up a goal, you know, just you just completely drop. If you don't have confidence in your goalie, sometimes you end up adjusting your system, whether that's coach-driven or player-driven, going, okay, I can't take that, you know, that maybe iffy pinch, because if I do that, I keep the puck in the zone, but if I miss, then it's going back the other way. I don't have the goaltender that's going to have my back and save that 4 out of 5 times that you need in the NHL to do that. So I do think that that's part of it. But, yeah, I mean, I agree that I think, and I'm not – If somebody were going to hire Yao next year, I certainly wouldn't, you know, campaign against it. I do think he is a solid coach, but I do have some questions about how good he is. I thought he had a very good defense when he was in Minnesota coaching there, and a lot of the time I didn't think that defense played quite as good as the personnel that was there. And I think it's sort of a similar situation now here in St. Louis. So, yeah, this is one that I'm not too upset about, and I won't necessarily chalk up to, okay, it's just that I can't fire 22 players that I'm making this move. All right, George, let's move on to the other coaching change, which could even be more interesting just because it has a number of different layers to it, although I guess it's sort of similar in terms of the layers of the coach, of the GM, maybe trying to save his job kind of thing. But I almost wonder if it's the curse of Glenn Sather. I mean, have they ever, like, even been decently good since Sather left? Not that I think Sather's the end-all, be-all. I really, really don't, you know. But it's just interesting. I mean, it's obviously been more than a decade, more than 15 years, you know, since this team has been consistently good and just running their organization well in terms of developing players and the trades and moves that they make, the signings that they make. You know, but before I get too ahead of myself, let's look at the coaching situation. So again, is this you know, when it comes to McClellan, is this the GM just grasping at straws, trying to save himself? The typical what I mentioned before about you can't fire all the players, or again, is this another situation where you're looking at it like, okay, I don't know how good a coach McClain is, or even if he is a good coach, it just wasn't working there, that you understand this change, it makes sense to you there. You know, so there's that aspect. So actually, why don't we start with that, and then I'll follow up about Ken Hitchcock and some of the other questions I have about Edmonton. So McClellan, was it time for him to go, in your opinion? George?
When it comes to the Oilers, this is now the 8th head coach in the past 10 years. All right, boys and girls, after a while, the problem's not the head coach. The problem's the GM. All right. They made household changes a few years back, and obviously more changes. I mean, I think this organization needs to be stripped down, really stripped down, where everybody has to go. And you start fresh. You start the right way because it's not working. You know, you look at the Oilers. I think I think they may have also gotten fooled 2 years ago by that strong playoff run. Yeah, I think that's what happened here as well. I look at this team, Scott. Now, I'm an Islander fan. And if I could take anybody off the Oilers to put on the Islanders, obviously taking McDavid, taking Draisaitl, right? That's obvious. After that, it becomes like, okay, I could take this guy. But, there's nobody. What I'm trying to say is there's nobody here I'm dying to grab after that. This is a two, maybe three-player team. If you want to put Nugent Hopkins here, who's certainly not in the category of the other two, but fine. That's it. There's not a lot of talent here. So I'm going at this. There's not a lot of talent. There's some interesting players, but they seem to be a couple of high-level players, and then everything else is third and fourth liners, and more fourth liners than third. Defense, no top pairings. Nobody at all. You'd want to be. I don't think it's a 1-2 or a 3 here. You know, some interesting floors: Clefbaugh, Nurse. You know, second pairing, low end second pairing guys. But that's it. Talbot is all of a sudden not playing anywhere near as well as he did the first season and a quarter with Edmonton. You know, Koskinen's out playing him now. He might have to take that starting job, and he's not the end all the be all either. You know, so there are a lot of issues here. Player development hasn't really happened here. Anybody could have taken McDavid in that draft, Draisaitl too, for that matter. Yeah, you know, but that other than that hasn't worked out. You traded everybody else. Taylor Hall is gone. Eberle is gone. Yakupov never panned out. I mean, he had all these number one picks. How the hell are you not a better team than this? I mean, really, how are you not a better team than this? It's just atrocious. Well, it's just bad management. You know, you're lucky you're playing in the Pacific Division where no one's running away with it. You know, you got 21 points. You're in what, fifth place, but you're in better shape than that because you have games in hand on just about everybody other than the Coyotes and Kings. So good for you there. Do I mind McClellan being fired? I don't, but I think the whole organization needs to be fired. Really, I mean, I would strip everything down here. It just hasn't worked. This is not all McClellan's fault, not all at all. And it's probably not all fair for him to be fired either, mind you. But I think everyone needs to go. You know, it's a fire sale. Everybody needs to go. You look at this, like I said, player development hasn't been good. I could have developed Connor McDavid. Anybody could have. He's just a great player, natural hockey player. All those number one picks I mentioned, which means you also had high second round picks, high third round picks. Where the hell are they? I mean, really, what happened here? That no, none of these guys developed at all. My mind is a fire sale. Everybody must go. In the organization, McDavid doesn't go. Draisaitl probably doesn't go. Everybody else, coaches, managers, I guess the owner can't go. Everybody else can go, and this team needs a major, major overhaul. Even if by keeping it everything the same, maybe squeak into the playoffs this year, because I don't think that's out of the realm either. That's just not good enough. That's just not good enough. Somebody, I believe it was Chris Meany, who put on Twitter that the Oilers are starting to remind him of the Angels with Mike Trout, how they're wasting his best years. And I don't know if I can quite give that comparison. Yeah, Trout's been with the Angels for a while now. McDavid's only his third season. Maybe not quite there, but I get the comparison. And it's not wrong. You know, they're wasting his best years here. You might want to get this guy the talent around him and not just assume he can win it all by himself. I think it's pretty close to a catastrophe. It's a sports catastrophe as to what's going on in Edmonton here. And I think everybody, really, it's like crazy Eddie. Everything must go. Well, everybody must go.
I got to be honest, George. I'm a little surprised by, you know, your main point about really cleaning house and everybody must go. But I have to say, I think it's pretty on point. I think the hiring of Chiarelli, even though I know he's not exactly been a fan favorite, you know, whether Boston, Edmonton, or just in the hockey world, I don't necessarily think he's regarded incredibly well. But one of the positives of when he was hired is that it seemed to finally break the string of the Edmonton Oilers ownership and senior management group just recycling old famous Oilers, McTavish, Kevin Lowe, and the litany of other guys over the last 20-plus years there. You know, so that in that respect, I sort of had a little bit of hope, because even though I'm not putting Chiarelli in my top 5 or top 10 or probably even top 15 GMs, and could be quite a bit lower than that, I still thought it was sort of, all right, he's competent. And I know some people will debate me on that. You know, and he's breaking, like I said, he's sort of breaking the trend there, and maybe he could sort of could shatter the mold, bring in his people, and that'll sort of help things. Because I thought that was the problem for years here because of everything that you mentioned about all the high draft picks and not developing players and some of the decisions that they make, you know, whether it be line combinations or signings and whatnot. And Chiarelli has done nothing to give anybody any hope that that things are changing here. You know, you pretty much wrote the laundry list there. I mean, I agree. You know, there's after McDavid and Drysdale, there's a few guys that I kind of like in passing, and I'd be fine having on my team. Klefbom, Nurse, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins to a lesser extent. So it's not completely devoid of talent, you know, but you're making this coaching change. You traded for Ottawa's defenseman Weidman, who's a right-handed offensive defenseman, going to be playing in probably the third pairing. And you also trade Strom back to the New York area, although this time to the New York Rangers, for Spooner. Now, as a Ranger fan myself, I'm not doing any cartwheels that we got Strom. But I'm perfectly happy he just took Spooner and his $4 million off my hand, even though the money actually works out exactly the same as it was before with cash that was exchanged there. And I'm willing to sort of take the shot on Strom. Why not? You know, at least as far as being a Ranger fan and that perspective. But this does seem to reek of desperate GM trying to keep his job, which brings me to my next question, probably the last one, when it comes to the Oilers, of the hiring that they made. Now, again, like most things, I could probably spin this, you know, as a positive or a negative, but Ken Hitchcock, George, I said this when he went to Dallas last year, you're not hiring Ken Hitchcock to guide your organization for the next decade. We know he's older. He's talked about openly about retiring. He was supposed to retire when he was in St. Louis, and he decided to stay. Went to Dallas, didn't work, so it's like, oh, yeah, I should have retired. I'm doing it now. Now that you fired me, kind of thing. Then, boom, he ends up here in Edmonton. So, George, this is what seems to me that it's a pretty win-now hiring. With everything that you just said about this organization, does that make sense at all to you? I mean, like, I know he's a disciplinarian, and maybe sort of being a disciplinarian can maybe have some positive domino effect on this organization, since I don't know if that's been there for a while now. But outside of that, I don't know if I get this. What do you think, George? Do you like it, hate it, indifferent? Ken Hitchcock, being the head coach of the Oilers now, George, what do you think?
Well, once again, I think this is GM covering his ass. Because I 100% agree with you. When you hire Hitchcock, you're thinking now. You're certainly not thinking 2 years from now. I don't know if Hitchcock's going to be there at the end of the year. Nothing's been promised to Hitchcock. He has no contract for next year with Edmonton. All right, so this is just a one-year thing and done. I think this is the head coach, the GM, wanting to get the best head coach available to get to the playoffs this season, even if it hurts long-term. And I'm not saying it will. Listen, I think Hitchcock is Hitchcock. Just read his name, though. Hitchcock. I like it. I may have to use that more often. I think Hitchcock could very well be a Hall of Fame coach. Well, he'll make the Hall of Fame one day. I think he absolutely could be that, and I wouldn't argue against it. So I think he is that good a coach. Actually, I'm an Islander fan. Before the Islanders hired Trotter, Hitchcock would have come along. I would have been thrilled to have him. I think, once again, legitimate coach, players will respond to him. But I also like to think long-term here. And if I'm a true fan of the team, all right, you're not winning the Stanley Cup this year. Right, you're not. You can think all you want, but you're not winning the Stanley Cup this year. So, therefore, you need someone long-term. Now, once again, this could be a situation, Scott, where – there is no long-term answer available right now, and that very well could be true. You know, coaches, you're not going to, no one's going to allow you to hire the hot assistant of someone's roster, right, of someone's team. It's the middle of the season. You have to wait till after the year. And if that's the true plan here, then I really don't have an issue with this. You know, I don't. But it is short-term thinking here to hire Hitchcock. But, you know, what's your second choice? I mean, you still with the Blackhawks, the Blues that they hired Berube. Right, and they've already pretty much told Berube, well, you're not in our long-term plans. That's really not good either, because guess what Berube's doing now? All he cares about now is winning. And once again, that's what a head coach should care about. Yes and no. Will he play the young players now, the Thomases on that team that need to play to get better for the future? Maybe not, because guess what? He doesn't care about the future. He won't be there. He's been told he won't be there. He'd have to be lights out to be there. So it's a tale of two organizations. You know, when you think about what they've done. Oilers went for the veteran coach doesn't give a shit about anything. He's going to do what he wants to do, you know, and he's going to go try to win the playoffs this year. Berube's the same thing, but Hitchcock's not worried about his future. He knows he's not playing, you know, he's not coaching 5 years down the line anyway. Berube does want to coach 5 years down the line, or 2 years down the line, hell, 3 years down the line, whatever it is. And he's going to do things differently that may not be great for this organization. I mentioned guys like Robert Thomas need to play now You know, Yao wasn't doing it. Berube's probably not going to do it unless he's been ordered by the organization to do it. You know, maybe that changes things then. So it's two different philosophies on who you should hire here. One goes with the Hall of Fame coach. One goes with the rookie. But like I said, I'm not going to knock Edmonton truly for it because I do think even if they had somebody in mind, someone they'd like to hire, you know, they're not going to be able to get permission to talk to that guy, not in season. They're going to have to wait till the end of the year. And therefore, Hitchcock, you know, it could also be a case, Scott, where, you know, Chiarelli believes this team needs a kick in the ass. They weren't responding to McClellan. They weren't listening. They'll listen to Hitchcock. Once again, the guy has respect. You know he's been through the wars. You know he's done what he's done. His resume tells you he knows what he's done. So maybe that will force players to do things they shouldn't be doing. You know, I don't want to single out Connor McDavid, but you know, one of the negatives of his game was not the greatest at playing, you know, as a center coming back and helping on defense. Hitchcock will demand that he play defense. Even if he has to give up some of his offensive skills, he has to come back and help on D and be that third man back. Has to, or else his ice time will be reduced. Because Hitchcock will do that. He won't care. So maybe that's what Chiarelli was saying as well, that he needed a more disciplinarian head coach. I'm not talking Mike Keenan here, but I'm talking someone who will demand you do it and follow through, and someone the players will respond to once again and not just do their own thing here. So I wonder if that plays into this as well. Is that you can go all over the place with this Hitchcock signing. The bottom line is I really don't mind it, with the exception that it's short-sighted. You know, what are you going to do next year now when Hitchcock doesn't come back, so you don't bring him back? And you hire probably a retread or, you know, a rookie head coach. And you go, could you be back to, you know, square one again? I'm not blaming McDavid, so I don't want this to come out wrong. But let's say McDavid, who wasn't really, you know, bursting the Jets to come back under McClellan. He does it under Hitchcock. But what happens next year now if they hire this, you know, hot assistant? I mean, maybe we all like to hire, but does McDavid not respond to that again? And once again, becoming the guy who doesn't hightail it back, or does he pick up after Hitchcock? And now he does. You know, so you wonder how that works there. So once again, I'm not blaming this on McDavid. Really using him more as an example than anything else. But yeah, I have heard that's one of the things that they want Hitchcock to turn around here, is to get the team, the forwards, more defensive, responsible.
Well, I do have to say that alone would sort of be a notable uptick. I don't, it would not in any way solve all the problems in Edmonton, but that would be a notable uptick, just, you know, more defensive responsibility. So I can definitely sort of see that. A random side note, as far as St. Louis is concerned, Robert Thomas moved up to right wing on the second line with Shannon Fabry. You know, when it could just sort of, you know, following up on the point that you made about Berube and wondering whether he'd play some of the younger guys that need to play, it would be totally interesting. Follows through, and 3, 5, 6 games from now, that's still the case. But bringing it back to the Edmonton Oilers and Ken Hitchcock, one fantasy hockey-related question. George, Hitchcock, you just sort of laid it out really spectacularly. Defensive coach, defense, defense, defense. I don't care what your name is on the back of your sweater. You don't play defense, you know, competently, let alone good. I'm going to sit you. I'm not going to give you 20 minutes a game kind of thing. Are you worried in any significant way that Hitchcock coaching the Edmonton Oilers is going to severely or very notably undercut McDavid's scoring potential? I mean, because you're talking about a guy who's been triple digits last couple of years, and if he didn't get injured that first year, he might have been triple digits that first year too. I mean, we're talking about what is largely considered the second-best player, not just in the NHL, in the world. At playing hockey. So anybody who's got him as a keeper, anybody who's drafted first or second overall, is looking for 90 points. They want that to be their automatic. Something that they should be concerned about, or is it more of, yeah, he's going to score like 5 or 10 points less, but he's still going to be just fine. So this really shouldn't be an issue for you. I mean, I think you could say, Drysdale, maybe this question could extend to him as well. But obviously McDavid is the focus here. So, George, is this a concern for you, fantasy hockey-wise?
Is it a concern to me? I mean, it's certainly in the back of my mind, and I think Drysdale would be in the same category, by the way. But it can also be a good thing. If you're playing defense, you're getting the puck more. You'll get the puck out more, and you'll get it more. So it can go both ways here. I think what you may be more worried about than anything else by playing defense is he maybe can't play, you know, 70, 80-second shifts, So you have to go down to 50, no more than a minute before he has to go back. I can see that being the case here. But I think in the end, it's generally a good thing. You play defense. The Oilers have had problems with puck possession, but if you're coming back and all the forwards, and I don't mean just McDavid, I mean all of them are playing more defensive responsible and playing their defensive coverage, then you should get the puck more on offense. But that people forget about here, rather than waiting for that breakout, the three-on-twos. You'll get the puck more on offense. You'll get it out. You'll have more offensive zone coverage here. So I think that's what Hitchcock's going to look for. He's going to demand it either way. So whether you believe it or not, it's coming. Because that's what Hitchcock wants here. So I think it'll happen here. But I think in the end, sure, I think what you said is right. Could it cost them 5-10 points? Sure. In the overall scheme of things, should fantasy owners care? No.
All right, fair enough, George. Last coaching change question before we move on to the fantasy reports. And I just sort of have to ask this just because of the stark difference between last year and this year that I sort of teased at the top of the show. No firing in season last year, George. We're a quarter mark into the season this year. We've got 4 firings already, so I simply have to ask, is there a next up guy or two on your list since GM seems to be in the coaching firing frenzy the last week and a half, 2 weeks? I'm just wondering if you think there's anybody else who is particularly on the hot seat that you think has at least a reasonable or pretty good chance of maybe being dismissed if they don't turn things around in the next month or two, or at least between now and the end of the season. So, George, do you have a next-up guy that you're looking at to possibly be dismissed? George?
Well, as always, whenever you're doing this, you're looking at the you're looking at the coaches of teams that are underperforming, and that aren't playing well. Those are the guys you tend to think, all right, maybe they could get canned, fired, axed, whatever it might be. It's funny. If not the fact that the Anaheim Ducks somehow are in third place in that division, once again, weak division, I would wonder if Carlisle could be in trouble. Yeah, but they're playing good enough, so they're not going to be. But that's a team I certainly looked at, though, where they were in the standings when this question came up. Bruce Cassidy and Boston, same thing, but there's a lot of injuries there. Same with Anaheim, by the way. That could explain why this team's not playing so well. So I think he's okay for that reason there. I'm not going to give any of the bad teams. But those coaches are always on the block. You want to go teams that are just bad or have been bad year after year. We get to fire the Ottawa head coach. Who cares? But one name that comes to my mind. And I looked at this the other day. Probably either earlier this week, maybe last week, would be Sullivan in Pittsburgh. We've seen this team make moves before. And you look at once again all those teams I said earlier that are not playing well. Second to last place in the Metro. Granted, they're only 3 games, 6 points out of first. That division is stacked. They have at least one game in hand on everybody, 2 on the Rangers. So once again, you can make the argument they're right there. But a team has been playing well. And what happened? All right, they made a trade. I said it before. What happens first? You trade a player or trade 2 players. You traded Hagelin for Pearson. And you give that a little time. That doesn't work. What comes next? The head coach comes next. So that's always something I look at here. When an underperforming team makes a deal, that's the first domino. Now what comes next? Sullivan's somebody I would certainly put on a list here of a head coach to watch. Bowner with Florida, but I don't know if he's got enough time just a couple of years after that fiasco with the last head coach. So I don't know if they want to go that direction yet as far as firing another head coach. That would be interesting. But I don't think it's going to happen. I said Hakstol with Philadelphia. Once again, they're not playing well. They're currently beating the Rangers 1-0 in the second. But, I wonder if that could come down because, once again, team has been disappointing. They expected more out of them, and they're in last place. That's not good. And you're behind teams that no one expected to do well. The Islanders, who are definitely heading back in the wrong direction, Rangers, Devils, and these teams are all ahead of you. So you wonder if that could be somebody who is going to start to feel the pressure there, especially in Philadelphia. We know how those fans go about things. So he's somebody I would certainly wouldn't be shocked. I think is where I'm going with that. Wouldn't be shocked. But I think the first guy, as far as the name guy, Scott, the first guy I watch is Sullivan in Pittsburgh.
Interesting list, and I sort of like the way that how you put it with, each coach that you mentioned, why it might happen, and just the overall situation. Carlisle would certainly be at the top of my list, but I completely agree with you in the fact that it said, yes, it's a weak division, but they're still third and they've got injuries. Theoretically, at least, they're going to eventually get healthy, and that should just be at least a little bit more of an uptick. So you're looking at a likely, at least in that, you know, that weekend division, a likely playoff team, you know, unless they really crash and burn or one of the teams below them really starts playing much better, you know, and Vegas could definitely be that team, you know, that would push them down to fourth. I could see that in the long run there. But outside of that, for the reason that you just said, I don't think they'll actually pull the trigger on that, at least not in season there. I've heard some talk about Sullivan for the very reasons that you said, you know, and I do find it sort of interesting and almost like to tweak my brother-in-law about it because he's a Pittsburgh Penguin fan, and, you know, he always likes to, you know, tease me hockey-wise, and he's not a big Ovechkin fan, so he's always going on and on over the years how Ovechkin is a coach killer. Well, I'm pretty sure that Crosby and Malkin have had more coaches than Ovechkin, and they also have had the situation, it was two for sure, but I think it might have been three times, and, you know, especially if you go back earlier in the Crosby era, that this team has won a Stanley Cup after firing a coach in December. So that all sort of feeds that fire that you said about Sullivan. I guess one of the reasons why I'm not quite on board with that is that I don't want that to, or I don't think that should happen. But it's very rare that NHL GMs call me to ask me their opinion on these things, one way or another. But either way, really nice list with the other, especially with some of the other guys. I like what you said about Bugner in Florida, because I think it is too early to pull that trigger. But if they didn't just have their five-game winning streak, and I know they lost the last game, but they had a five-game winning streak to start, you know, turning things around. And as you pointed out, you know, they played the least amount of games in the NHL. I think those kind of things contribute to saving him, you know. Although now that Trocheck is down, if they go into another tailspin and it's a month from now and they're still struggling, then I think the question more legitimately comes up again. All right, folks, let's turn our attention to the fantasy reports. Going to go sort of change it up, at least from our normal way of doing it, and start off with a goalie report just because my IR report is a little bit lengthy, not crazy lengthy, but a little bit lengthy. So I think we're going to push a full hour today, and on this holiday weekend, George, I just don't want to keep you that long. Not so fair, especially if you, you know, have any family plans or just want to relax. But either way, another reason why I want to start with the goalie report is more drama in the goalies. Matt Murray, George, oof. Correct me if I'm wrong. I heard either Sullivan or Rutherford say that it's going to be, quote-unquote, a longer time that Murray is going to be out. Eek. Although considering how he was playing or not playing that well, I don't know if that's entirely a terrible loss. But either way, George, how bad is that injury? And is there a clear guy who should pick up to replace him at number one? I mean, is DeSmith the clear, like, taking over now because he was the backup, or is Jarry the guy who's going to be the main go-to guy while Murray's out? Or does that have to play out? Do we not even know the answer to that question yet? And we have to see how it plays out over the next handful of games before we can make that determination. So totally important in general, but obviously starting with Pittsburgh, George, what do you got?
Yeah, this was a strange one. I mean, the goalie report in general is long. There are a lot of – I mean, we didn't do the show Monday, so that's also part of it here. But yeah, I think you put it right. A lot of drama in the goalies. A lot of illnesses for goalies. See, a lot of goalies have been sick this week, and that's also a little strange. But as for Pittsburgh, you mentioned it was a strange one. We got a report, you know, in the morning, Murray, you know, probably going to be out a day or two. And then all of a sudden, an hour later, it's long-term. Long-term, lower body injury, he's done. You know, I guess that in some ways that's good, some clarity to the situation. So Murray's out long term. Now you mentioned, all right, you would think that's automatically a good move for Casey DeSmith, that he's going to be the guy there. If you had Murray and DeSmith, you're probably kind of happy about this. You get to put Murray on IR, there's some clarity now on who the star is going to be, you're all good. And that's the way I would read it as well, but Jarry's getting the start tonight. Now, they do play back-to-back games. So that could play into this as well. They play Boston tonight, Columbus tomorrow. So, you know, both are tough teams, so neither one's an obvious, oh, God, why is he getting this start, not that one. So I expect DeSmith to go tomorrow, but Jarry's going tonight. I said, bottom line is, yeah, if DeSmith's out there, I think that's your first pickup. But I don't think it's written in stone here that he's going to start, be the starter you want. He's going to start, you know, three of every four games, and Jarry will get that out of the game. I don't think that we know that at all. We also don't know what Sullivan's definition of long-term is. 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 months, 10 years. No one knows. You know, so keep that in mind as well here. But Murray's out. We'll be placed on IR. I think the Smith is the guy you want. Minnesota, Dubnyk's out tonight. Once again, one of these illnesses. Lots of this going around, especially with Golden. It's weird. Different. A lot of illnesses. Dubnyk's out. Stalock's going to start tonight. Shouldn't be a long-term thing. Soros going to start off in Nashville tonight. Once again, this is with the holiday weekend in the NHL with its lovely scheduling of one game Tuesday, no games Thursday. There's a truckload of games this weekend of teams playing back-to-back or at least playing Friday and Sunday. Only two teams only have one game this weekend, Minnesota and Ottawa. But that being said, Soros is starting, and it's not back-to-back. Nashville plays St. Louis tonight, Anaheim Sunday. So a little something there. Rene's been playing fine, though. But once again, I wonder if he's one of these sick goaltenders, and that's why he can't play. Ranta's back. You know, he's back for Arizona, should start. They sent down Hunter Miska. Even if Ranta doesn't start, let you know he's damn close to doing it. Oh, by the way, Kaapo Kapanen was recalled from the AHL for Minnesota to back up Stalock tonight. Rask, Boston, I love what teams do when they tell us who's going to start the back-to-backs. Halak tonight, Rask tomorrow. So there you go with Boston. They're letting you know who's going to start when. Philadelphia, you already know Picard's starting today for the Flyers. Neuvirth is out at least until at least another week, until December. No really updates on Elliott. He could return maybe a week after that, maybe mid-December, before Philadelphia gets truly healthy. And that, we know Bishop is out for Dallas. So they're saying at least another week, three more games, at least another week, where you'll get Hudobin there to start for the Stars. It's a lower body injury for Bishop, but not terrible. Once again, just another week. It looked much worse when the injury originally happened here. We'll live with that. Matt Kohenny will start for tonight for the Hurricanes here. Start the last couple of games there, playing well. Mrazek still dealing with a lower body injury. Not sure when he could return there. So once again, we'll see that. Koskinen starting for Edmonton. Now, this is really interesting. We didn't talk about this when we talked about the firing here because it's really more the goalie report. But, you know, Hitchcock has no allegiance to Talbot whatsoever now. None. Think about that. No allegiance to Talbot. He doesn't care what Talbot did 2 years ago during the playoff run. He wasn't there. He only cares about now. And I've been mentioning Koskinen anyway. And I think he's pretty close, Scott, to a must pickup, especially if you're a Talbot owner. Because Hitchcock just may say, oh, Koskinen's a better goaltender. He's my starter. It could be just that simple. You know, he's not going to feel what McClellan was feeling from a couple of years ago. But, you know, I remember Talbot really played well. You know, got us almost to the Stanley Cup Finals here. He's not going to feel that at all. Koskinen is somebody I definitely want to go out and grab if you have a room on your roster, but especially if you're a Talbot owner here. I think it's a good cover for you. Niemi's going to start for tonight for Montreal. No worries about Price there. By the way, Dallas recalled Landon Beau in case you need a shot in the dark. Vancouver, Nilsson has returned from his finger injury. They sent down Richard Bachman, and Nilsson's going to start tonight, or is expected to start tonight, I should say, for Vancouver. They sent down Thatcher Demko there. it's Thatcher Demko, but it wasn't the backup. Richard Bachman was. But Demko has recovered from his concussion. He was on IR for a while now, and now he's gone there for Vancouver, back to the minors. Gibson, another one of these goalies earlier this week dealing with an illness. He's back. No worries there. Kevin Boyle was sent back down to the AHL, so you're covered. Braden Holtby had an upper body injury. He's also returned. Ilya Samsonov was sent down to the AHL. The LA Kings, Budaj, illness. Like I said, a lot of goalies sick. It's weird. Is there an illness out there that only affects goaltenders? Cole Kuehler was returned to the AHL. So once again, Budaj is fine. Jonathan Quick. He is expected to begin skating. It's any day now. Good sign in his recovery, but obviously still at least a week away from returning there. The Rangers, no injuries here, but one thing to keep in mind, Lundqvist is starting today. The Rangers have said, hey, he might start tomorrow, and they've done this before. They're not afraid to start Lundqvist on back-to-back nights, and that may have been one of the reasons why they started Georgiev against the Islanders on Wednesday, knowing that Lundqvist would start Friday and Saturday. So Georgiev had the shutout here, so you'd think they'd want to get him back in net, you know, a hot goaltender and all, but then again, you know, the Hall of Fame, I'm not afraid to start Lundqvist back-to-back either, especially if he doesn't. I haven't really watched a lot of this game today, but if this game's not a heavy workload for Lundqvist, I wouldn't be afraid of starting him tomorrow. Just something to keep in mind. Don't automatically think that Georgiev is starting tomorrow. Calgary, you know, I've been beating this drum now for weeks. Rittich starting Friday. He's the better goaltender right now than Mike Smith. You know, if Mike Smith didn't have the bigger contract or wasn't the bigger name, I think Rittich should already be a starting goaltender. He's outperforming in every way, shape, or form. Not so sure what everybody's waiting for here. I think he is your starting goaltender for Calgary, and he's almost a must-add in fantasy leagues here. So Rittich starts Friday for Calgary. Mike Smith, if you're a Mike Smith owner, it might be a little time to panic.
No, that is quite the lengthy goalie report, George. And I almost wonder, just spitballing here, if all these quote-unquote sick goaltenders is sort of a subtle protest against all the goalie equipment that has been reduced in size. I'm actually totally kidding when I say that. But still, it is so unusual, as you pointed out. You have to wonder what's going on here. All right, George, you know the follow-up question. You've already teased a little bit about it a couple times in the show, but because of the schedule this week, partly with Thanksgiving, but no games on Thursday, and I think, what was it, Tuesday there weren't any games as well, we've got a lot of games this weekend. 29 out of the 31 teams are playing two games this week. 22 of them are back-to-back situations. So given that landscape and looking at fantasy, especially with all these sick goaltenders that you mentioned, even though I know some of them are coming back and they'd be fine, you know, still between all the games played and all the sick goaltenders, I imagine there should be some plenty of opportunity to stream a goaltender for those owners in daily lineup leagues or a fantasy owner who needs to cover some of these injuries, especially if a goaltender's going to miss a couple of games because of the flu or whatever is going on with them, let alone somebody like Matt Murray who's going to be out for a while. So looking at the landscape, George, who comes off as some of the best recommendations possible for this weekend?
Well, you mentioned there are plenty of backup goaltenders. Now, I already said there's only two teams that only have one game this weekend. That's Minnesota and Ottawa. Everyone else is playing, too. I'm not going to go through all 29 teams in their schedule, which I usually would do. So the teams playing two games this weekend, it's obviously every team but Minnesota and Ottawa. But the goaltenders you're looking for, Halak, we already know he's starting tonight. He's somebody you certainly want to look at. Boston's got some issues, but so does Pittsburgh. Yeah, new teams, Boston, they lost Bergeron now. Their defense is messed up. But Halak is someone you certainly want to look at. Rittich, must claim. He's a must claim, boys and girls. You should be going out and getting him. He goes against Vegas tonight. Might get the Arizona game on Sunday as well. We haven't seen Mike Smith in a while. I think Rittich has won six straight. So he's a goaltender you want now. Back to one-offs. Dallas, already said, Hudobin's going to get at least the next three games for Dallas. So you're getting two games this weekend, at least the first game next week. It opens someone you should get. Koskinen, or just talked about why you should be going to get him. Hitchcock doesn't care what Talbot's done in the past. Koskinen's playing better right now. He may feel he's the better goaltender. He may have a long-term goaltender out of this. He's someone you should get here. Another one-off, Reimer with Florida. Once again, this is comes back down to two games here. He's probably getting the Chicago game tomorrow. Reimer could be a play here. Soros, Nashville. He's starting Friday. It's not a back-to-back situation. I really don't know why he's starting over this to give Renee a rest here for one game. St. Louis, we already know. Listen to their problems. They're not playing very well. Kincaid plays the Islanders today. Islanders nowhere near as well as they were earlier this season here. Devils, Kincaid playing well. Schneider's nowhere to be found. Kincaid is someone you might want to pick up. And, of course, Casey DeSmith, we discussed him. Pittsburgh, once again, you might have a long-term goaltender here that you can grab that's on your waiver wire here. Remember, Casey DeSmith has to be claimed, just has to be claimed, in case he is the number one starter at Pittsburgh. Like I said, I really wish that Sullivan would have defined long-term, Scott. 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever it might be. We don't know. You know, everybody's definition of long-term is different. Your definition of long-term may be different than my definition of long-term, but we don't know what Sullivan's definition is, and that's all that matters in this case. But Casey DeSmith is probably maybe your number one guy to go grab because I think long-term, at the very least, on the low end of long-term is 2 weeks, and I think long-term for Sullivan probably means a month, so at least a month. So I think you're going to get a goaltender until maybe the next calendar year here. So bottom line is this, Scott. If anyone's complaining about not finding a goaltender this weekend, you didn't try very hard. There are plenty out there to grab.
Oh, yeah, and the nice thing, and this is the one of the few nice things, although it doesn't happen all the time, is that when you have this much difficult news, you know, that we've had, especially in the last 2 weeks, with goaltenders, it is at least providing some good opportunity of, you know, for guys replacing them, whether it be temporary just for a game or two or for a few weeks or a month or two. There definitely are some options both for this weekend and for the next coming weeks, maybe longer, with some of the guys that you mentioned and for the reasons that you mentioned it. All right, George, thanks as always. I will finish up the rest of the show without you. You have a good holiday weekend, and we'll talk to you on Monday, turning our attention over to the waiver wire recommendations for the Skaters, just since piggybacking off, since that's what we were talking about with George with the goaltenders. Obviously, we've got a whole bunch of teams with lots of games this weekend. Some of the teams that jump out at me is the best schedule. I know Boston has injuries and issues, but still playing Pittsburgh and Montreal is kind of intriguing to me nonetheless, especially, you know, with some of the sort of the tweakings that they've done with their lines, which I'll get to when I talk about the IRM lines report in a little while. But also Carolina playing Florida and the Islanders, Colorado against Arizona and Dallas this weekend, Vancouver against San Jose that hasn't been quite playing at their peak, even though they're pretty darn good, and L.A., all those teams jump out at me as particularly good options for this weekend if you're looking to pick up someone and get a couple of games out of them. If you're just looking for one-off, that Pittsburgh-Boston game tonight, I actually like both teams from an offensive standpoint. You have a Boston team that is missing four of their top six defensemen. Even their goaltenders have played well. That still makes it difficult. Plus, you're missing Bergeron, as George mentioned, and, you know, he might be as good or better than most of their defensemen on the defensive side. So Pittsburgh obviously can score, we know that, but also Pittsburgh with their defensive lapses. That should be a good pickup if you pick up somebody from either one of those teams. Looking at Saturday, even though that's usually the most full day of the week, a couple of options jump out at me. Boston, again, playing Montreal, and Columbus against that Pittsburgh Penguin team are both good options for Saturday. Looking at Sunday, another matchup where I like both teams here, New Jersey Devils playing the Tampa Bay Lightning. Lightning, obviously, a really good team. Devils seeming to find at least a little bit of offensive swagger recently that I find it sort of pretty intriguing as well as far as specific player recommendations. My biggest recommendation might be a bit of a surprise to you because it comes from the Detroit Red Wings, Athuasio, the center left-wing eligible player. At least in Yahoo leagues, is 23% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo. In the last six games, he's been pretty much on fire with 5 goals, 3 assists, +7, averaging almost 4 shots on goal per game, playing Washington and Buffalo this weekend, so pretty decent matchups. And then even moving into next week, Columbus and St. Louis start you off, so you could get a nice little like four-game swing out of Athuasio, playing on a second line with Franz Nielsen and Nyquist. And in the same period of the last six games, Nielsen has 5 points. Over the last 11 games, Nyquist has 9 points. So that second line there is actually playing pretty good. Get them while they're hot, stream it for a couple of games. If you have a hole that one of these guys will fill, obviously Athuasio is the guy that I think would be the best option, but they're all pretty interesting. Also, Kippa Hayes from the New York Rangers, the center's only 13% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues in the last 11 games, 3 goals, 8 assists, 2 power play points, a shorthanded point, averaging 3 shots on goal per game, playing Philadelphia right now and Washington tomorrow, but then even moving into next week, home and home against Ottawa, and then Montreal, so a nice sort of 5-game stretch you can get out of Kevin Hayes, potentially. Mikko Koivu, who I actually recommended a week ago, but I couldn't resist because he's been playing so well since I recommended him. The Minnesota Center's only 32% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues in the last 5 games, 2 goals, 6 assists, 5 power play points. He's got 19 points in 21 games overall, playing with Parise and Coyle now. Sort of been rotating that right wing. Granlund's been there for a decent amount of time this season, but outside of him, sort of been a bit of a revolving door. But it hasn't stopped Koivu from producing. I know centers are plentiful in fantasy hockey, but this is a guy that I think is being a little bit overlooked. He does have his hot and cold stretches. So I'm not saying if you decide to take up Koivu, he's going to be on your team for the rest of the year, but you can get some nice weeks out of him at a time, good 6-8 games, before he'll sort of cool off for about the same amount of time and then sort of heat back up. So definitely a good temporary pickup. And if you're weak at center, he could be longer term than that. And then finally, if you're looking for a defenseman, Damon Severson of the New Jersey Devils is only 27% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues in the last 6 games. He's got a goal and 4 assists, +4, a power play point, a shorthanded point, and averaging 2.5 shots on goal per game, which anything more than a shot and a half per game average from a defenseman is very, very good. He also has 14 points in 20 games, which, again, you're talking about a 52-point season, I believe, if that averages out to in a full season. Not saying that he's going to be a 50, 55-point defensive guy, but he is definitely a pretty good option that's slowly developing. Playing Islanders and Tampa Bay this weekend and even bleeding into next week, Florida and Washington are on the docket as well for the New Jersey Devils. So, again, another good couple of games you get from Severson, most likely. All right, turning our attention to the IRM Lines report, and I'm seriously considering just calling this the Anaheim Ducks report because in the last 2, 3, 4 years, man, it is just not stopping with the Anaheim Ducks. I know there's been other teams. What was it, 3 years ago with Columbus Blue Jackets? It was absolutely ridiculous. There's always one team every year, at least, that has some ridiculous injury issues. But once again, we know about a lot of them. But now Lindholm joins the group with a lower body injury. He's been put on the IR, missed the last few games, likely out at least a week. But I really think it's going to be 2 weeks before you see him again. And I didn't expect this to happen. I didn't expect it to happen quite so soon. Kase recently returning to the lineup, gets put on the right wing on the top line with Getzlaf and Reichel. That could be a pretty nice boon for Kase in particular. I actually myself picked the Kase just before it came off the IR for a fantasy team. And then I had a little bit of a roster crunch where I had other guys coming off the IR. So I ended up having to drop him, especially since he only had one goal in the first four games back, and he was playing on the third line. So I was like, all right, it's going to be a little while until he warms up. I drop him, one of you gets put on the top line. Exactly the point where I'd want to pick him up again. So you might want to take advantage of that as well. Second line is going to be Henrique, Silverberg, and Aberg as well. In Boston, we already know and teased about the Bergeron rib and sternoclavicular injury going to be reevaluated in 4 weeks. He's not going to be back in 4 weeks. 4 weeks is not the timetable. That's the timetable until we get reevaluated. So do yourself a favor. As soon as it's going to be at least six, if it ends up being four, and Bergeron has a history of beating the time frames of injuries that he's gotten and coming back and even playing injured but still playing effective and producing while he's injured. So since it is Bergeron, you could very well maybe 3 weeks that he's at, 3 or 4 weeks that he's out. But just to play it safe, you should just assume it's going to be longer than that. McAvoy with that concussion has been skating the last couple of days. It looks like they're going to target the middle of next week as a potential return for him, so that would certainly be a boon. And the first three games since Bergeron was out, man, it was a little bit like they took a deck of cards, threw it up in the air, and how they fell is how they decided on the lines. That's an exaggeration, of course, but they really sort of tossed everything up in the air and shuffled everything up pretty good, and now it's sort of taking a very familiar tone as Marchand and Pasternak back together on the top line, and Forrest Bakke-Carlson, the third-line center, getting an opportunity on the top line between the two of them, Krejci, DeBrusk, and Heinonen is your second line. In Buffalo, Pominville rejoins the top line with Skinner and Eichel. So for all those guys out there, or, and gals for that matter, who dropped Pominville when he was moved off that top line, you can at least consider picking him back up again. In Calgary, it's been a bit of a revolving door trying to find a right wing to play with Backlund and Tkachuk, and they may have found it in Sam Bennett, who had been waiting for a while to sort of really grow in and mature, or grow into himself and mature. Last three games playing on that second line right wing, he's got 2 goals, 2 assists, plus 3, 11 penalty minutes, 2 power play points, only 5% owned. So if you're looking for this weekend, he's playing Vegas and Arizona on the road. But this is a guy definitely to watch to see if this is going to sort of cement itself. So, you know, if you have room on your roster and you're looking for a wing, he might be an interesting guy to sort of pick up and stash and see how he does over the next half dozen games. If your roster is more full, keep an eye on him. If nobody else plucks him, assuming he still keeps up the production, he could be a guy to look at. Also, for the Flames, Brolic, lower body injury, lands him on the IR. It looks like he's going to be out at least a week or two before he returns. Also, Mark Stone, blood clot. Has gotten out indefinitely. It's most likely going to be at least a couple of months before he returns as well. In Chicago, those new lines with the new coach sort of seem to be coalescing. He looks like he's keeping Patrick Kane and Taze together, at least here in the early going. Brendan Saad now playing with them. And the last three games, that trio does have 9 points together. It's not sort of lighting up the world, you know, on fire, but it is at least some decent production there, and Debrinkat re-enters the top six, playing with Anisimov and Schmaltz on your second line, at least for right now. For Dallas, Devon Shore is returning tonight, playing on the second line with Hintz and Spezza, and Hintz does have 2 goals in the last three games since he has rejoined the lineup himself. In Detroit, Applicator takes the place of Helm on the top line, playing with Larkin and Mesa. Helm, an upper body injury, is going to keep him out at least 6 to 8 weeks before he returns. And I did mention that Nyquist, Nielsen, and Afiasio line playing pretty darn good as of late. in Edmonton. We got the Kagula, McDavid, and Drysdale line, and the newly acquired Spooner playing with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Chase on there. That was actually sort of, I didn't get a chance to ask George about that trade. Not that that's really going to be, I think, that significant for either team, but still. In Florida, oh, did you see how gruesome that Trocheck injury was? It was painful to watch. I heard it was gruesome, and I didn't watch it because of that, and I had like three people send me the link to it to watch it anyway. I watched it a little while ago before the show started, and yeah, it's just as bad as I thought it was. It's going to be a while. I think we all know that when it comes to fixing that fractured ankle. He is expected to return before the end of the season, but don't be surprised if we're not, if we're looking at like March, even the end of March, you know, before we see Trocheck back in the fold for the Panthers. Bjugstad moves up to center of the second line with Trocheck out, and Malgin and Huberto are playing with him, with Ventura moving down, back down to the third line. For the Montreal Canadiens, could be some potential pretty big news. In fact, I'm glad I picked him up myself in one of my leagues. Shea Weber could return as early as Tuesday. Now, we did say sometime between after Thanksgiving and the first end of the first week of December looked like it was realistic for him to return a couple of weeks ago, but now that's actually happening. It's got to be pretty exciting for both Montreal Canadiens fans as well as fantasy owners. But that's not just it for the Montreal Canadiens in terms of getting reinforcements. Juleson also looks like he is just about ready to return. There'll probably be another game or two. I think it's going to be later in the week that Juleson will return. But certainly having reinforcements for that defense isn't going to hurt anything for the Montreal Canadiens and might indeed help keep them going and maybe even play better, dare I say. In Nashville, Subban with that upper body injury, he was moved to the IRs, now missed the last five games. Now, Poole, the GM, did say that he is progressing, but it looks like it's going to be a while longer. So I think you can assume at least another couple of weeks before you get back Subban back in the lineup, and I think it might be closer to 3 weeks before he returns. Either way, if you have Subban on your team and you haven't done it already, you're definitely going to want to find a replacement for him for at least a little while. Also, changing up the lines there in Nashville, Craig Smith getting an opportunity on the top line with Johansson and Arvidsson. And second line is Turris, Hartman, and Yarncroc as well. For the New Jersey Devils, I couldn't help notice how well that they've been playing, especially offensively. They had some injuries. It looked like Hershier, as we know, last week had gone out. It was only missed a couple of games, but we weren't sure, at least initially, how bad it was going to be. Zajac sort of beat it out of the lineup. And because of that, they ended up recalling Zacha, who, if you recall, a couple of weeks ago was demoted. And he has been practically on fire the last three games since being reinserted in the lineup. Zacha is only 2% owned, has got a three-game goal scoring streak, scoring four goals in the six games since he has been recalled, playing with Jack Bratt and Johansson. Bratt himself has 5 points in six in his last six games. It's been eight games since he returned. So those two seem to be finding the chemistry that they had at least at the very beginning of last season. Those first 12, 15 games of the season where those two were pretty on fire together, it looks like they've found it again. The big question is just whether they can continue it after more than just a couple more games. For New York Rangers, Zuccarello did indeed return today for the New York Rangers, playing with Elias Anderson and Fogarty as well. And the Rangers lose McLeod for a couple months with a fractured hand as well. In Ottawa, Colin White is out for today. It doesn't look like it's going to be long-term, but this is notable just because Colin White has been playing regularly as your top, one of your top six centers the last 3 weeks or so. And he's not sort of lighting up the world on fire in terms of his production, but he does have 13 points in 22 games so far this season. And certainly would be an intriguing player for this rebuilding team to sort of just let settle in that top six and let him play out the season and develop, especially since he seemed to be developing some decent chemistry with some of those guys in that top six for the Ottawa Senators as well. I can't ignore Batherson, the rookie who recently recalled, getting 5 points in the four games since he's been recalled, playing with Duchesne and Boddicker as well on that top line. In Pittsburgh, well, thank God Crosby's back. I think a lot of people in Pittsburgh are holding their breath, but he did return, and to a very familiar top line with Gunsell and Hornquist. Malkin, Pearson, and Kessel making up your second line there as well. And I'm not telling you to run out and pick up Pearson, especially if you're in more standard-type leagues. He is just 10% owned, though, and he does have 3 points in the four games since he has been traded to Pittsburgh. And obviously, anytime you're playing against on the line with a guy like Malkin, let alone Kessel, there's some good potential to be had there as well. In St. Louis, shaking up the lines, Greg Berube a little bit, putting Stanford on the top line with O'Reilly and Tarasenko. I mentioned earlier in the show, Robert Thomas getting an opportunity on the second line with Shen and Fabry as well. In Toronto, Austin Matthews with that shoulder injury, it sounds like he's pretty darn close to returning. But one caveat, well, I don't know if caveat is the right word, but one thing that has to happen that Bobcat's going to want to happen and the team in general before he plays is that he's going to have to not only have a practice, but have a hard physical practice. Now, the thing is, because of Toronto's busy schedule this week, they're not going to practice until Tuesday. So he theoretically is healthy enough to play sometime this weekend, but if they're going to hold to that he needs to practice first before he plays, he's not going to play until the middle or the end of next week. So if you are a fantasy owner, it looks like he's going to be back soon, maybe just not quite as soon as you want, but it should be no later than the end of next week, I say the middle of next week, before he gets back in the lineup for the Toronto Maple Leafs. In Vancouver, Boeser, with that groin injury, looks like he's targeting the middle to end of next week as he is returned, for his return, that is. But in the meantime, they have promoted Sam Gagne and put him on the top line with Horvat and Mott for the for Vancouver Canucks. Barchi, though, with a concussion, looks like he had a little bit of a setback. He skated for the first time the other day, and it did not go well. He felt horrible. So I think there was sort of hope that it would be another week and a half before Barchi can come back when he skated. I don't think that is realistic whatsoever for the Vancouver Canuck. And finally, in Washington, Kanetsev with the upper body injury, listed as day-to-day, missed the last three. Sounds like he is very doubtful for both games this weekend, and the same can be said for TJ Oshie with his upper body injury. Both listed as day-to-day, but doesn't look like either will play this weekend. And in the interim, Eller, Connolly, and Verana will be your second line for the Washington Capitals. All right, folks, that's all that we have for today. I hope everybody's having a good American Thanksgiving, and you have your Thanksgiving to look forward to sometime soon there in Canada, if I'm right, or if I'm mixing up that date. I'm sure I'll probably hear from somebody on Twitter or whatnot if I got that completely wrong, which I'd be embarrassed. But needless to say, have a good hockey weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday.